Hello, friends. It's your old pal, Ariel Helwani, on this Wednesday, March the 4th. We've got a super stacked edition of the Wednesday pod, so stay tuned for that. I'm very excited about it. But before we get to the actual show, let me tell you about our good friends over at ZipRecruiter. As you know, it's tough to find good help running your business. Ooh, what's this? What do we got here?
New Zealand music.
Okay. For Izzy, the last stylebender. I like it, TST. And by the way, welcome back. In any event, as you know, you want to run a business? It's tough. It's a hard life out there. You receive too many applications and you can't get through them all. Trouble spotting the most qualified candidates in a sea of possibilities. How do you do it? How do you navigate it? Luckily, there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect qualified candidates. That place for me is ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. Guess what? ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites. I mean, just think of this. This is an amazing service. They don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter sends thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. First day, I just said. The first day. Could you imagine the first day? Anyway, right now, try ZipRecruiter for free. My listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. That's what you can do. ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And by the way, one guy who was hired long before ZipRecruiter existed, that's Scott Van Pelt, the legend, the man, SVP, one of my favorite people here at ESPN. He's got a new podcast called The SV Pod, and he's got a new episode up this week. And guess what? His guest, one of the most interesting characters in college basketball. I've never heard of this guy, but I heard the pod. I don't want to give too much away. This guy is absolutely fascinating. Great conversation. If you want to check that out, I suggest you find The SV Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, leave him a review. And by the way, leave us a review. That's how we get to do this. Apparently, reviews matter. So review, rate, subscribe, download, all that stuff and more. Okay? I love you all. Let's do this. By the way, this episode may contain language that is not suitable for all audiences, so TST wants you to know that listener discretion is advised. Now on to the show. Back in your life on this Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. We got a lot to discuss. Yesterday, I got a very serious text message from TST, who, by the way, has come out of retirement. We'll get to him later. He said, no more talking for like 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes at the top of the show. We need to get right into it. Stop wasting time. And so I'm getting right into it. Later in the program, the Canadian gangster, Olivier Aubin-Mercier, he's going to break some news. Stay tuned for that. We'll also talk to Phil Murphy, our resident Australia/New Zealand MMA expert. We'll also talk to Brian Butler, the manager for Zhang Weili. Talk to him about, hey, how difficult was it to get Zhang from China to Thailand, to Abu Dhabi, to Las Vegas to fight this fight on Saturday? It's UFC 248 fight week. It's Israel Adesanya going up against Yoel Romero. It's the last stylebender against the soldier of God. It's Zhang Weili against Yuan Yan Jacek. There's a lot to talk about. And so with that in mind, let's say hello right off the bat. Look at that. I did that in like a minute. ESPN's own Mark Raimondi joins us. Mark, how are you? I'm out of breath.
I'm terrific, Ariel.
Are you
getting
emails in the middle of the show? What's happening there?
I'm a busy man. There are things happening. I'm in Vegas. It's fight week. It's a mile a minute right now.
What's the scene like? I love how I always have you on the Wednesday morning at the beginning of fight week.
Before anything happens.
Yes, and I always ask you about the buzz in the scene. And there's always, like, the one thing you say is, you know, the Uber driver I spoke to, he was sort of lukewarm about the event, right? That's like the big takeaway.
that's the Raimondi trademark. Yeah, well, my Uber driver said, no, I mean, it seems like, I honestly don't even know. I can't even tell you. I would probably be BSing otherwise, but it seems pretty quiet in Vegas, but it is Wednesday. So these things usually pick up later in the week, as we know.
before I ask you about 248 in Las Vegas, let's put Norfolk to bed. Yesterday, UFC President Dana White met with the media and seemed pretty clear about the fact that he wants to run it back between Joseph Benavidez and Davison Figueiredo. By now, you probably know what happened. Figueiredo missed weight by 2.5 pounds, ends up winning the vacant title fight. So as a result, there is no flyweight champion, even though Henry Cejudo is still claiming to be the champion. And there was the clash of heads. There was the knockout. Figueiredo walks away the victor. Sans belt. Benavidez now 0-3 in UFC title fights. Dana comes out yesterday, talks to the media, and says, yeah, I feel like you got to run it back. Do you agree?
I mean, yeah, I do kind of agree, honestly. I think that there are – well, first of all, it's just so unfortunate what happened with Figueiredo missing weight. And every time there's one of these title fights, like a half title fight, it's just so – it's so anticlimactic, right? It's like, it's not a real title fight. It's happened to the guy fighting in the main event on Saturday, Yoel Romero, twice now, where he's weighed and he can't win the title. So it's not even a real title fight. And then there was the clash of heads, and the whole thing is just, I mean, it just leaves a sour taste in your mouth, the whole situation. So I kind of understand. I kind of thought of that as soon as it happened. I was like, they should probably run this back, and it seems like that's what's going to happen. I mean, the division is, If they're going to move forward with this flyweight division, and it seems like they are, that's probably the right fight to make for that. We need some closure on this story.
You see, I would argue that this is the wrong choice, and I'll tell you why. First of all, yes, he missed weight, but Benavidez took the fight. So after the fact, you can't say, oh, he missed weight, and so we're going to run it back. No, you took the fight. Now, did you take the fight with a rematch clause? Because if so, then let us know. Then that's like, you know, contractually, that's in the contract. You're obligated to take that fight. But to the best of my knowledge, a new contract wasn't drawn up. So to just use the fact that he missed weight as a reason for the rematch, to me, I say is a little bit much. And number two, I would say that the clash of heads was Benavidez's fault. He was going in with the head. Just
it was
because
incidental, yes.
Sure, but why are we blaming Figueiredo for it? Why are we using that as part of the reason why we should run this back? He didn't do anything wrong. He got headbutted as Benavidez got headbutted.
Sure. What I would say is that, of course, Benavidez had to take that fight. Are you kidding me? He would not have been able to leave Norfolk without taking that fight. The UFC, I'm sure, put a great deal of pressure on him. I'm sure he wanted to get paid. They wouldn't have paid him if not. So that to me is, of course, he took the fight. He couldn't turn that fight down. And I'm sure that something was said like, hey, I'm going to take this fight. I don't need to take this fight because the title is on the line for this guy. But if something happens, I should get a rematch. I'm sure that was said. Maybe it wasn't written down, as you said. Maybe it isn't in a contract. But I can't blame them for making this decision. And to your point about the headbutt, I do agree. It was incidental. That kind of thing happens. It was unfortunate. But again, another reason why, do it again. If Figueiredo was the better fighter, make weight, actually hit 125, not 127.5, and win the fight. I mean, he didn't do, half of his job. And I think he should have to do that again.
Contrary to popular belief, there's actually a solid crop of flyweight prospects right now. No one's a huge star, but there are some other names. There are some other names that could fight for a belt. There's Jussier Formiga, who has a history with Figueiredo, Brandon Moreno, who's looked really good, Oscar Askarov. What about Kaikar France coming out of that city kickboxing? Put aside all that other stuff, considering the fact that the fight was won via knockout in the second round, and I thought Figueiredo won the first round as well. Do you have interest in this fight again? And in particular, do you have interest in Benavidez going for his fourth UFC title after being 0-3 in the first three fights?
I do have interest in the fight again, and I would say that all those names, I do think there are some promising names of flyweight, but none of them are really ready for that title shot right now. Formiga is probably the closest. He does have a win over Figueiredo, but let those guys fight each other. Let them sort it out. We'll probably get this fight sometime, but probably the first half of the year still. I think it'll happen probably before July, so it'll get sorted quickly, and then the winner of, whoever emerges as a contender from those guys can fight for the title next against Figueiredo or Benavidez. Benavidez won the first round in all the judges' scorecards. Say what you may about the judging in Virginia.
But did you agree with that?
The first round. I did. I thought he won the first round.
Okay.
I would be interested in seeing the fight again. Look, the Joseph Benavidez story to me is extremely compelling. He lost. He was the number two guy in the world for almost a decade. behind Demetrius Johnson, lost him twice, and he pretty much beat everyone else over the course of 7 years. No, I mean, 8 years. 2012 yes. was when he fought Demetrius the first time in the inaugural flyweight title fight. So it's a compelling narrative, and I think he's still the biggest name in the division. And, I mean, it would be poetic if he were to win the title. But he was not able to do that on Saturday, and we'll see what happens if Figueiredo actually makes weight the second time.
You also thought that John Jones beat Dominic Reyes in the second round and in the fight, you know, in total. So I don't know if I can take your word.
I did. Me and Joe Solis.
Yes, you have a lot in common. What about this? I know that we like to say that the UFC doesn't like tournaments, but let's not forget this whole division was born out of a tournament. Now, I know it was just a four-man tournament, but wouldn't this be the perfect time to do – we don't have to get crazy. We don't have to make it a 16-man tournament. You got a vacant title, much like I believe off the top of my head, I hope I'm not screwing this up, my favorite WrestleMania of all time was WrestleMania 4, the tournament.
I know what you're going to say.
Remember?
Yes.
The one-night tournament? That was so much fun.
Yes.
Now, I'm not advocating
Fantastic.
For a one-night tournament, but that was amazing. That was at the, I think, the Trump Taj Mahal in Atlantic City. Maybe my favorite one, of course, we all remember when Bret Hart got screwed by Bad News Brown after the Battle Royal and he hit him over the rope and all that stuff. That's when I really fell in love with the Hitman. But what about an eight-man tournament? Vacant title. Like, a lot of people are saying this is the perfect way to end the division. I say this is the perfect way to start a tournament, do something a little different. What do you think of that idea?
I am also a mark for tournaments. I will have to agree with you. I think that would be – look, if the UFC – and we know that they're – creatively, they're not the most creative promotion in the world, put it that way. A tournament would be very interesting, and it would maybe even – somewhat reinvigorate the division. I mean, I don't know if it would fully, but it would give some stakes back to that division, and not just one fight, several fights over the course of many rounds. So I would be in favor of something like that. I do like tournaments. I don't know how they would do it. I kind of dig what Invicta is doing, the one night tournaments where it's one round, the first two rounds of the tournament, and then a three round final. That's kind of cool. You know, an eight-person tournament, they're going to be doing it on Friday. I mean, I do dig the idea, and I wish they would do that, but in lieu of that, I think I'd be fine with the rematch.
And of course, the craziest idea of them all is to just get rid of the Cejudo Aldo fight and do Cejudo versus Figueiredo. That's the real best idea, right?
Well, that doesn't seem very likely, Ariel.
I know, but let's just be honest. That is the best idea.
Cejudo is never going down to 125 again, and I can't really fault him for that.
Why not?
Why kill yourself to make weight? He's already the bantamweight champion. It doesn't make any sense to try to get down 10 more pounds. It's too much. He had a hard time doing it throughout his career.
Fair enough. Okay, wow. All of a sudden, you got all serious on us there.
You know how I feel about weight cutting.
That's right. So that's why you're so mad at Figueiredo, right?
I'm not mad at anyone. I'm just saying, you know, make the weight. I mean, it's not a real win. I mean, he didn't fulfill his end of the bargain. You know, he came in 2.5 pounds heavier. Does that make a difference? Maybe it doesn't make a difference in terms of sheer mass, but it makes a difference in the fact that Benavidez was, you know, killing himself to cut all the way down and Figueiredo stopped and started hydrating. I mean, so it does make a difference to me.
All right. So we'll see what happens there when they book this fight. It sounds like this is something that Dana White wants to do. And obviously he has the power to make these things happen and turn them into a reality. So we'll see what happens. Now, on Monday, speaking of 248, you were in Los Angeles. You had some time with Yoel Romero. He met you guys at that famous spot. Where is that spot, by the way, that they always do like the media gathering in Los Angeles? It's always the same spot every time.
It's called Hinoki and the Bird, Ariel.
Okay, nice little plug.
It is famous for the incident where Tony Ferguson and Fabricio Verdum almost fought there.
That's right.
During a joint media launch. And ever since then, the UFC has not had two fighters at the same time do a media launch there.
Oh, wow. Even if they're friends. Even if they're not even fighting each other.
Even if they're friends. They'll stagger it. So they'll have two fighters there. They'll do one, then they'll do the next. They won't have them sitting there at the same time.
Okay.
Because as the kids say, S almost popped off.
Yes.
That media lunch.
Yes. All right. So this time it was just Yoel Romero. Any big takeaway from that media event? I saw that he was trying to eat some fried chicken, and I guess he was told that'd be a bad idea, especially since he missed weight prior to his last two title fights. But that's any right. big takeaway from being around Yoel?
Well, the fried chicken at Hinoki and the Bird is excellent.
Is it?
I do recommend it for anyone. It's fantastic. That place is really good. I thought Romero was extremely loose. I thought he was having a lot of laughs. He was having a good time. He didn't seem like he was going to be in a title fight against the champion in a few days. He felt loose. He really felt relaxed. I was impressed. A lot of times when we see Yoel during fight weeks, it's close to that weight cut. It's close to that water cut, and he's quiet. His voice is a little raspy because he's dry. You know, his throat is dry. And this was a different version of him. He dropped some really interesting quotes about his relationship with Khabib Nurmagomedov, and he's talking about religion and culture, and it was a wide spanning conversation that was pretty enjoyable. I think it was like a 40-minute media scrum that he did. He was holding court.
Yes, he's come a long way as far as his English speaking skills are concerned as well, and I think that really helps him out a lot in terms of developing a connection with not only the media but the American public. I just filmed Ariel the Bad Guy, and Shail said something which I very much disagreed with. He said there's more pressure on Izzy Adesanya I gotta get that ingrained in my mind, than Romero, because Adesanya is the champion. And I think that's a ludicrous statement because Romero is winless in all his title fights and is 42 years old. If he wins, he's the second oldest champion in UFC history, but there's no chance that they're going to give him another crack unless there's some sort of crazy controversy here, right? I mean, who do you agree with here? Do you agree with Chael or do you agree with me?
I definitely see Chael's side of it, honestly. And as I was talking to people for my experts pick article that's going to be coming out, I believe, on Thursday morning, one person actually said the same thing that Chael did, and it was Derek Brunson, who fought both men, fought Adesanya as well as Romero, and he said that Adesanya has the pressure. He's on this streak. He's the guy that is on the cusp of stardom, and he really needs to win this fight. Whereas Romero is 42 years old. He turns 43 next month. He's kind of on, I mean, I know he wants to fight for 10 more years, as he said, but the expectations are not that high for him at this point, I feel like. So I do see what Chael is saying, but to your point, yes, I mean, this is kind of, it does feel very much like Romero's last chance at a title, although we have said that before about others, and they have gotten other title shots. But this is a big one. Honestly, the biggest thing for Romero, the biggest pressure, just make the weight. Yeah. Has not done it in a title fight yet. It's crazy to say that this will be, if he makes the weight, the first chance that he actually has to win a title. He's been in title fights, he's been booked in title fights, but he's actually missed weight for both of them.
Right.
So this will be his only real chance at a title fight, technically, which is crazy. It's actually his first title fight.
Officially, because he did have the interim title fight at UFC 213, right? He lost to Robert Whittaker.
Right, the first official undisputed title shot.
That's right, yeah. And to be honest, that's exactly what I said on Saturday. I was like, all right, I can't foresee any scenario where Joseph Benavidez gets another crack. But to your point,
there you go.
We say this all the time, and people get cracks at belts. So we'll see what happens. A lot of drama on Friday, because not only do we have the drama surrounding Romero making weight, but there's also drama surrounding Joanna Jędrzejczyk, right? Remember
going
into her last fight, there was all kinds of talk of her not making weight. She made the weight, but she has had trouble in the past. So we'll see how that all pans out. I will see you in Las Vegas, my friend. Thank you very much, as always.
My pleasure, Ariel.
All right. See you soon. There he is, Mark Raimondi of ESPN. Let's stick with the Zhang Weili versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk fight, which happens on Saturday, co-main event, UFC 248. Dana White speaking to the media yesterday saying that he is more excited for that fight than he is for the main event. He seemed very, very high on this particular fight, and with good reason. It's a phenomenal fight. Zhang Weili, 20-1, 20-fight winning streak. She lost her debut, hasn't lost since. Of course, undefeated in the UFC, beat Jessica Andrade to win the belt back in August, first Chinese-born champion in UFC history. And Joanna Jędrzejczyk, if she wins, she'll become the first female in UFC history to win the same title on two separate occasions. Of course, she put that division on the map. But one of the big storylines, if not the biggest storyline heading into this fight, has been, would the fight actually happen? Because, of course, we all know what's going on across the world now regarding the deadly coronavirus. Well, it originated in China, and there was some concern that Zhang would not be able to fight in this particular fight. And she was in Thailand and then had to go to Abu Dhabi to get quarantined and then finally made her way to Las Vegas a little over a week ago. And I wanted to talk to someone close to her camp about everything that went into getting her to Las Vegas. Who better than her manager, Brian Butler, to talk to us about this? And he's kind enough to join us now on the podcast. Brian, how are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. So could you tell me just how stressful this was, how difficult it was to get Zhang from China all the way to Las Vegas, and what did the journey look like?
Yeah, it was, you know, if you see her today or during this week, you probably wouldn't even notice it at all. She's so mentally strong. But the whole process of getting here was obviously pretty stressful. You know, she had to, you know, the U.S., I guess, put a 14-day quarantine on anybody coming out of China coming in here. So we basically had to get her, you know, out of China and get that 14 days going as fast as possible in order to ensure that she could get here. So firstly, she went to Thailand, and then, you know, then there was a concern that Thailand was going to get locked down. So we, you know, she just started getting to a groove of training camp in Thailand when we had to get her shot off to Abu Dhabi. She stayed there, until the 14 days was up. And then, finally got here to the U.S. And, it was just, I could tell that, you know, watching the way she was training in her hotel room and stuff like that. I mean, there's no way you're fighting, you know, the biggest fight of your career. And there's no way that this could not have been a stressful situation. I mean, you see her doing step ups on the mattress of her bed at the hotel room and stuff like that. I mean, it just shows how mentally strong she was to be able to stay focused during all of that and come here and be as sharp as she is. And I will tell you, Ariel, she is looking really, really sharp.
At any point, was there a serious discussion to postpone the fight, to say, like, this is just too much before your first title defense, let's just, you know, move this to April or something?
Not once.
Really?
Not once. Not that's what I was very surprised from. And, you know, I don't want to say that my guess would have been most fighters would have probably done that, but that's what I would have expected, and who would blame anybody, right? Not a peep from her on that. She just stayed focused and has come here and really, you know, like I said, she looks so, so sharp.
Now, was the plan always to spend some time in Thailand, or did she go to Thailand because of what was happening back home in China?
That's the reason she left China.
Okay, so it was first Thailand, and then why did she have to go from Thailand to Abu Dhabi? Why not just stay in Thailand? Was it because it was then spreading to Thailand as well?
My understanding is that Thailand was, you know, had let in a lot of people coming there for that same type of reason, not fighters, but just people in general.
Right.
And that there was concern that Thailand might also get locked down or something, but yeah.
And any particular reason why you chose Abu Dhabi?
I'll tell you, we were working diligently with the UFC, and the UFC was so, so good at trying to accommodate everything that they could in this very bad situation. And the travel team and the UFC and Hunter and everybody, they just they bent over backwards to do anything to try to keep her comfortable during all of this.
I saw her interview with Brett Okamoto last week, and one of the things that she said was that she got, when she was told that she had to leave Thailand, it happened, you know, rather abruptly, and she got very emotional and called her mom and just seemed like kind of, you know, upset over it all and distraught, and who could blame her? This is such a big deal. Could you speak to that as well? You know, at one point, were you just starting to think like, man, this is just a lot for a young person to handle, especially going into a fight like this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with all of this stuff, it was, you know, that was going on. Like I said, I wouldn't blame anybody for pulling out of this fight. And you know, she had a talk with her mom, and you know, her mom just like zoned her right back in and said, you know, there are people that are dealing with far worse things than this right now, and basically hit her with a lot of perspective. And you know, Whaley was able to really quickly get herself back in the mental mindset and never look back.
And in terms of her team, I know that her team has had some trouble in the past getting visas and whatnot. Was anyone left at home, or did everyone make the trip as well?
That's what I'm telling you. The UFC travel team, everybody in that department, they they did everything and they got everything to happen. And like I said, I applaud them for it. Everybody worked very, very hard on this.
I know that you and Jiang have a relationship with Tulsi Gabbard. Did she play a part? She's a U.S. politician, very influential, of course. Did she play a part in any of this?
She did. I connected the UFC office with her office, and they worked side by side to make everything happen.
Wow. And how did that relationship even come about? Like, how did that start?
With
Tulsi.
Tulsi
and
so
you guys.
I got to know Tulsi years ago because I work with so many Hawaiians, and Tulsi has always been a avid fan of mixed martial arts. And she just had randomly sent me a message saying, hey, it was around the time of trying to get the UFC to Hawaii, actually. And she's like, if there's anything I can do, let me know. Let's stay in contact. I'm here in D.C. And then I was like, oh, I'm in Virginia. I was like, we should grab lunch sometime. And she was like, absolutely. And then I drove up to D.C., had lunch with her and her husband, and she was just a really cool person, and we stayed in touch ever since. And when the situation came up with Zhang the first time, she reached out to me and asked if there's anything she could do, and I was like, I don't know, could you? I didn't even think to call Tulsi, So she reached out to me again, and I connected her and the UFC, and that was to get Whaley to Boston as a special guest and to do some media. And, they figured it out and they made it happen. And she got there. And then when this all came down, happened again, it was the UFC that actually asked if I could connect them together again for this. And I reached out to Tulsi this time, and she graciously did came through and connected herself with her team, with the UFC's team. And, I'm not sure what exactly transpired between the two of them because it got so busy. But bottom line is she's here, and Tulsi's actually coming here to the UFC on Friday. And she's going to join us for our pre-fight dinner. And, we're very, very grateful to her and her team.
Wow. When Zhang won the title back in August, I thought it would be a no-brainer to have her fight again back in China, because here you have the first Chinese-born champion. It could open so many doors. She's becoming a superstar, all that stuff and more. But I know how the schedule works, and they kind of plan these things out well in advance. Were you in favor of the idea of her fighting in her first title defense in America, and in particular Las Vegas, or would you have preferred her stay in China and fight at least closer to home, even if it's not China, but somewhere at least closer to home where it makes a lot more sense geographically and demographic-wise?
I think, Weili loves fighting in China, and she definitely wants to fight there again, but I also think she likes fighting here in America, and I think she's really, really enjoyed opening herself up to American fans and so forth. I mean, like, you see her how she's really taken to learning English. It's like I her and I were talking, and I was like, I'm gonna take my Mandarin lessons, and I started my Mandarin lessons at the same time she started her English lessons. At this point, there's no point in me, I'm gonna keep trying, but she's so far ahead of me on her English, like, it's amazing. I can actually have a full conversation with her in English. So she's very excited to be here fighting in America.
Wow. Yeah, she's come a long way, and I think that's such a smart move. And that was a conscious move on her part, right? Like, no one told her to do this, correct? To learn how to speak English better?
Well, we were talking, and she just, like I said, she loved the opportunity to get to know her American fans, and she knew that she couldn't do it if she couldn't communicate with them. So yeah, she took it upon herself to learn the language. I just can't believe how fast she's learned it.
Yeah, it really is. I can't wait to see that, in actual, in person later on this week, to see how far she's come, because I've seen some of the clips, and it's just amazing what she's done, and speaks to just how much she gets it, because you have a lot of athletes who just, for whatever reason, don't want to do it, and I think they have suffered as a result of this. One thing I wanted to ask you about, in addition to all of this, is one of your other clients, Rose Namajunas, who's coming back in April, said recently that She turned down a fight against Zhang Weili when she was considering whether or not to come back. She said this on the UFC Unfiltered podcast. This could potentially be a thing very soon, right? If Zhang wins on Saturday and if Rose wins in April, I could foresee them trying to go back into that well and making this fight. How do you feel about Rose fighting Zhang, and what kind of a awkward spot does that put you in because you represent both of them?
Yeah, not only do I represent both of them, but I'm very close personally with both of them. So it's very awkward. But, you know, at this level, you know, it's the sport of it. And the cool thing is that I think that the characters of both Rose and Zhang are that of such that they both know if it happened, it would purely be like, you know, like in Zhang's words, like master versus master. And we're just testing our skills, you know. There's no personal grudge or vendetta against, like, Rose doesn't want to kick Zhang's ass and vice versa. You know what I mean? It's just, they know that they're the two best fighters in the world. And that's, you know, something that might have to happen. It's a very awkward situation for me. I'm not even sure, like, how I will honestly handle it. I get nervous even talking about it, to be honest with you, because, like I said, I'm just so close with, you know, with Rose and Pat, and now I'm so close with Weili and her team. It's
But it does seem like that's the inevitable move, right? If they both win their next fight, that's probably the fight.
It's probably the fight.
Yeah. Has she talked to you about, I know she's very proud of where she's from, and obviously this is a very stressful and tumultuous time back home in China. I was asked last week, is this too much pressure? And you just spoke about the fact that she's handling it very well. But I would imagine for someone who is very proud of where they're from, there's an even greater, drive to represent your country, right? And to paint them in a positive light in the midst of all of this. Has she expressed any of that to you? Like, now she's even more motivated, as opposed to being maybe down because she wants to do something great for China. Would that be accurate?
Very accurate. Even if you look at her fight kit now, they have the hashtag China Strong on her fight kit that she'll be wearing on Saturday. And she's this isn't just a China problem. It's a global problem is how she's looking at it. And she wants everybody to come together and unite to try to get through this and not, make jabs at people and make fun of people. And, you know, it's a very serious situation. And she takes it to heart pretty seriously.
That's huge. Well, I hope it all works out for her. I'm glad to hear that she is handling this as well as can be. And I can see this, as opposed to maybe crumbling her, I could see this maybe galvanizing her and propelling her to a big performance on Saturday. So I'm looking forward to that. And even with you, I know you've been down this road before with other fighters, but you used to represent Joanna as well, right? So you're kind of intertwined in this whole strawweight division. You built this division, for God's sakes, it seems like.
Yeah, right. No, I just have been fortunate enough to work with some good people. And it's interesting. I will say this one more thing to backtrack a little bit, Ariel. A fight that also that we are very interested in, very, very interested in, would be a super fight with Weili and Valentina.
At 125?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you saw the picture of them together at the PI this past week, but I don't think size is going to be a huge issue. I think it's just a very exciting stylistic matchup. And, if all goes well for Valentina and for Weili coming up, I think that's one that the fans would love to see. And I would love to see that.
As opposed to fighting Rose, if she wins, or Andrade.
I'm not as opposed. I'm speaking out loud.
Okay.
I think it's both of them could happen.
Yep.
Right? Because one's at strawweight and one's at flyweight.
Sure. Yep. And it would seem at some point Zhang would want to test the waters up there because she is, I mean, she's just jacked for 115, right?
She's already said that. She's already said it. And I think that Valentina took offense to it. You know, she said it back in Abu Dhabi.
Yep.
And I think that Valentina took offense to it, but she didn't mean it in a call out type of way. She was simply saying, you know, she wants to fight the best. And you know, she looks at Valentina as the best, you know, and she wants to test herself against the best. And that was it. And I think Valentina took it like, you know, how, you know, maybe Westerner might call her out, like,
and she got a little bit upset about it. But I think they've got that under control now. They took a smiling picture together with each other at the PI, and you know, that'd be a hell of a fight. And yeah, Whaley is jacked. She's a very strong strawweight.
Appreciate the insight, Brian. Good luck to you guys this week. Good luck to you guys on Saturday, and thanks for coming on again.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Anytime.
All right, there he is, Brian Butler, manager for the likes of Zhang Weili, Rose Namajunas, and many, many others over at Sucker Punch Entertainment. Does a great job and has a very big weekend coming up this weekend in Las Vegas. So that's the story as far as the champion in the co-main event is concerned. Now let's talk about the champion in the main event. His name, of course, is Israel Adesanya. He proudly represents Nigeria and New Zealand, of course, lives and trains out of New Zealand now, City Kickboxing, to be exact. And we've talked time and again about their rise and the great things that they're doing. Just a couple of weeks ago, they repeated the three-peat, as he put it, in Auckland. Three of their fighters picking up big wins, Kaikara France, Brad Riddell, and of course, Dan Hooker in the main event. But the face of that gym alongside their head coach, Eugene Behrman, is Israel Adesanya. He returns on Saturday against Yoel Romero, and someone who was in Auckland and who knows a lot about the New Zealand slash Australian scene is our very own Phil Murphy. No, he is not from Australia, nor is he from New Zealand, but he has become our expert for that part of the world. And so I'm very happy to have him on the program, just like Mark. He is in Las Vegas right now getting set for UFC 248, and he's kind enough to join us right now. Phil, how are you? Big guns, back on the show.
G'day, Ariel. How are you going?
I'm going. Is that something that they say? They don't say, how are you doing? They say, how are you going?
How are you going? Yeah, but it's more like, how are you going? It's just, it's very, very brief, very blunt, but yes, yeah, plain Aussie thing.
Longtime listeners of the Wednesday pod would know that Big Guns helped us launch this bad boy many moons ago, so I'm happy to have you back on. But could I ask, I never asked you this, how did you become the ESPN MMA expert for Australia and New Zealand? How did this happen? Because to the best of my knowledge, you don't have any actual ties to that part of the world, right?
No, I guess I do now, but it was kind of a perfect storm. You know, when I was hired to do SportsCenter for ESPN, it was within ESPN International. And we had, you know, some shows in Africa and some shows in the UK and some shows in Australia, basically anywhere English language outside the U.S. And, you know, I'm an MMA guy. You and I have been friends since before we were working together. And so when we were looking, okay, what kind of sports-specific shows can we do in these markets, I pointed to Australia and I said, hey, let's just try to do some MMA stuff there. You know, I knew it was a market that had a decent appetite for the UFC. They had some young talent at that point. Now, I didn't think City Kickboxing was going to blow up as it has. That's been really fortuitous for me and has really helped my frequent flyer accounts. But yeah, it just all kind of came together. So, you know, if you look at my day to day, my week to week, I have a baseball show in the UK. I have a UFC show in Australia. I have an NBA show that's launching soon in Africa, and then I have SportsCenter in a few of those markets. And that's kind of, you know, my five-day work week at ESPN. But the MMA thing has really afforded me a really cool opportunity to be at UFC 243 in Melbourne, and I was at UFC Auckland, and I'll be at 248 here. And, you know, 251 is the plan for Perth. So anytime there is something with the Australian MMA space, or, you know, whether it's Australian fighters or fights that might be of interest to Australian and Kiwi fans, I get the call.
You know what I love about you and how I know that you are truly, you know, sort of ingrained into that culture over there and that scene? We say UFC 248, but like Izzy, I noticed you say 243, 251. It's a very sort of, I don't know why they do it and we don't, but I noticed that you did it there a couple of times, and so that's how I know you're legit.
Yeah, man, they've trained me because I didn't want to be the one guy in the room saying it differently. So it's just one of those weird, you know, almost like dialect things you pick up. Like I catch myself, even with my wife, who is American, you know, I'll say, hey, what are we doing this weekend? I put the emphasis on the second syllable, just like I spend so much time talking to Aussies. I don't want to develop this like weird hybrid accent because I live in the U.S. I live in, you know, 30 minutes outside of Bristol. But every now and again, you know, I'm going to be talking to Eugene Behrman and Izzy and that crew later this week. So just, you know, dial up the Aussie just a little bit where I can.
So, like I said, you were in Auckland. Could you tell? I've never been there, but it's an amazing story to see how this little gym in this little corner of the world, has become such a force. In my opinion, Eugene was the coach of the year in 2019. If we were giving out awards for gym of the year, they could have won it as well. Izzy, contender for fight of the year. A lot of people thought he was the fighter of the year, excuse me, and was a part of the fight of the year against Kelvin Gastelum. How big of a deal is not only Izzy, but also, you know, what they're doing over there? When you're in Auckland, does everyone know who Israel Adesanya is? Does everyone know who Eugene Behrman is, who, you know, City Kickboxing is? Or is it still sort of kind of on the fringes?
I mean, it's hard to say because, you know, I didn't see any of those guys outside of an MMA contest. You know, we'd see them at the hotel and at events and various things like that. But it's not like, you know, Ty Carrance and I were going out grabbing a burger or something and you know, people, hey, Ty, that's you. It's kind of hard to tell outside the context, but what I will say is it per capita, there seems to be greater MMA fluency just in that part of the world. And I think part of it, honestly, is programming on ESPN. You would love it there because you turn on ESPN and it's not just, you know, SportsCenter and a lot of stuff they import from the U.S. show, but yeah, my UFC show's on there. They show your MMA show and the abbreviated, you know, ESPN2 version of it with frequency, but they also show Unlocking Victory, and they'll have ESPN Plus UFC programming that runs with regularity on those channels. So ESPN has become kind of their just American sport only channel, but because of a lot of rights advantages that they have, there are some round hole square peg type situations where it's like, oh no, we need 20 minutes of programming. Let's slap on a 20-minute segment from Unlocking Victory. So if you turn on ESPN, you need a lot more MMA programming. And with that, like I was saying, comes greater fluency because you'll hop in a cab or, you know, an Uber over to the arena and they hear my American accent and they say, hey, what are you here for? I'm like, oh, you know, I cover UFC, just kind of put out there. And I say, oh, they turn around, they start talking to me about like Jorge Masvidal and Usman, what that fight's going to be like. And just questions that I would say maybe are a little bit more 200 or 300 level questions than you would get in the same situation in the U.S. You know, again, if someone recognizes you out there, maybe they get like a more advanced question. But when people hear that I cover, you know, the UFC or MMA in the U.S., they're like, oh, that Irish guy, what's his name again? When's he fighting again? The questions and the appetite from fans, I would just say, are a little bit more advanced. And then with that, when you show up to the arena, you know, I've been to a ton of fights. The only arena I've ever heard louder than Spark Arena for UFC Auckland was JNSA Arena at UFC 237. When Jose Aldo was being introduced against Alex Volkanovski. That was the only time I've ever heard an arena louder than I heard Spark for that Dan Hooker, Paul Felder, the walkout. And the crazy thing is it only holds like 9 or 10,000 people. So it's just this voracious appetite for mixed martial arts there, which is so cool for someone like me who just loves the space and loves to report on the space. To see people just really appreciate it is just so awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it did seem very loud. It reminds me of being at Acer Arena back at UFC 127. That was in Sydney, Australia, for a BJ Penn John Fitch fight, and that was at 10 a.m. in the morning, sort of like the Auckland card, and I still think till this day that's the loudest arena that I've ever been in. When Mark Hunt fought and picked up his first UFC win, it was just amazing. So I can certainly believe and envision how loud that fan base is, even though I've never been to Auckland. Now, as far as Izzy is concerned, and I know you've told this story many times, but I don't think you've ever said it on this particular show. You knew Izzy back when he was just some guy brought in to be a sparring partner, right? Tell us this great story when you first encountered him back in Florida.
Yeah, I feel like a little bit of an MMA hipster that I knew him before he was cool. So Brett Okamoto and I were tasked to UFC 187 to fly down to Black Zillions and do a training feature with Rumble Johnson when he was scheduled to fight John Jones. And we get there on the first day, and, you know, I had interviews set up with Henry Hooft, and you know, Vitor Belfort was there, and Eddie Alvarez was there. And Henry says, you know, there's this kid here that I brought in to spar with Rumble who, for me, he's like, he reflects John Jones as much as anyone. And he didn't call him Stylebender. I think Henry messed up his name. He called him, like, Shapebender or something. And so Brett Okamoto and I are watching this scrawny kid who's, you know, he looks like John in terms of his build, except he was even skinnier, just piecing up Rumble in a sparring session. And Rumble was getting kind of upset. You know, he was throwing some right hands with some ill intent in a sparring session because he was getting kind of picked apart. And Brett and I took notice. We're looking like, oh my gosh, this kid's pretty sharp. And we're asking Henry about him. He said, yeah, you know, he's a kickboxer. He's from New Zealand. He's Nigerian background. He's 3-0 as a pro. And of course, it is Israel Adesanya, who is, you know, just coming up in the ranks. And, you know, to see him then and have a quick chat with him then, it's been really cool to see, you know, him grow up and blow up. And Henry Hoop knew before all of us. You know, he and Eugene go way back. So it's no surprise that he got the phone call. And I've talked to Izzy about it more recently. And he said, yeah, for him, that was, you know, not so much the grass is always greener, but for him, it said, okay, you know what? This is a realistic dream of mine to be a UFC world champion. If I stood toe-to-toe with Rumble Johnson, who at the time, you know, was among the most dangerous light heavyweights on the planet, then he said, then me as a true middleweight, then I can really make it in this business. So it's been cool to see all of that come to fruition. And then, you know, the kid coming to the UFC at 11-0, and I'm all geeked to watch him fight Rob Wilkinson at UFC 221 and on and on. So, yeah, it's a really cool, grainy video I have that I pop up on my Twitter feed every now and again to get some retweets, because it people love seeing it. It's just it's cool to see that, you know, the old school black zillions with those two standing across each other sparring.
Yeah, it's a great story. And another reason, if you're a journalist coming up, it's good to go to the gyms. It's good to, you know, go to the actual scene, not just meet fighters and coaches during fight week. It's good to go to the gyms, because you'll run into situations like this that will stick with you for a very long time. So that's just an amazing story. Now, you haven't seen Izzy yet, right?
I haven't seen him yet this week, no. And I won't be at open workouts today. Brett and I have a hit for my Australia show, but I'm sitting down with him tomorrow in advance of the media day. We got a little bit of exclusive time with him there, which will be cool. And I talked to Izzy in Auckland as well, both at City Kickboxing and then after the press conference with Romero. So he seems in good spirits. He seems incredibly confident. I mean, he's someone who just looks like he's on the cusp of superstardom.
Well, the reason I asked if you've seen him yet is because I wanted you to tell us if you were able to get a look at his arm, because I
will admit, the elbow thing. That's the, yeah.
I mean, what's going on?
Gross on your show.
Yes, he licked it. He actually licked it. Oh my gosh. He's a different kind of guy, but you know, to the idea that he could just say no to things and they will go away, you know, like I just wish that I was able to do that. I'm a hypochondriac, so I actually get probably too worried when I get sick or come across germs. But he's saying no. And then he licks the darn thing and says he's going to rub it on Yoel's face. Now, I spoke to both Romero's camp and Izzy's camp afterwards, and no one seems to be concerned about this whatsoever. I'm not a doctor, but just looking at it, it seemed kind of gnarly.
Yeah, it seems pretty gross. I mean, I'm not Stefania Bell. I can't really comment on it other than just being a little bit grossed out. But, you know, back to your point about him saying just no to things and they don't happen. It's something that you see for some people, you know, whether it's Conor McGregor or Kobe Bryant or whatever, the visualization and thoughts becoming things. And for Israel, he's just a cat that's built like that, where he's just said, you know, just articulates, I'm going to be a champion. I'm going to be the best at this. I'm going to be the best in the world. And him just putting it out there becomes something that he can pursue and follow and create. And that's what makes me really, really excited to see not just what happens in this fight. Who am I to look past Yoel Romero? I know he's not. But assuming the 3-1 favorite wins this fight, Israel, it's going to be interesting to see what's next for him and what that really does for his star. You know, outside of people like you and I having conversations like this, at what point does he break into that upper tier that McGregor, Rousey, Lesnar have before him?
So explain to me, because I'm sort of clueless when it comes to the international stuff at ESPN. People want to watch the stuff that you're doing in Las Vegas and just in general, covering the sport and with a focus on that part of the world. Had Megan Anderson on the show Monday, and I referenced the fact that she's, you know, a budding MMA analyst at ESPN because she works on the same shows that you work on. Could you tell us what these shows are and where people could find them? And could you only find them if you're living in Australia or New Zealand?
Well, yes and no. You know, to watch the full 30-minute or 60-minute show in its entirety, you would need to be in Australia or New Zealand, or, you know, some people have a way to find those things and stream them. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't, but that would be a way you could watch it outside of Australia and New Zealand. But it's a 30 to 60-minute MMA show, UFC-specific show, I should say, where it's called UFC Fight Camp. And the idea behind the show is that the best fighters in the world, they bring in everybody from nutritionists to jujitsu practitioners to wrestlers to kickboxers to get them ready for fight day. So we wanted to look at each of these cards through a few different lenses, through analysts, through the fighters themselves, through reporters, whoever it might be, former training partners. You know, I mean, in our pilot, we had Tom Egan on the show because of his, he's a buddy of mine, his personal relationship with Conor McGregor from way back when. So we have a few different angles from which we look at all the fights. And then, you know, from that point, it's a studio show from ESPN. But that said, you know, in our fighter interviews, a lot of those will find their ways onto the ESPN MMA YouTube channels. Or if we have a particularly compelling analysis segment, that'll find its way up. Or, you know, Megan, she's a tremendous analyst for us. And I think, man, I'm excited to see her break out. She has her color commentary debut on Invicta this week. I'm really excited to see that. If she has something that, you know, she makes a good point, then we clip that off and put it on social media. So through the ESPN MMA channels, there are ways to see what we're doing. But again, it is a show specifically marketed for Australia. Though if you were a fan from anywhere in the world, I think you'd benefit from it if you have an appetite for the space.
Love it. Well, keep up the great work. I'm looking forward to seeing you down there, potentially working with you guys. I love when you guys are down there because there's more stuff to do. And again, there's a bit of a different spin on it. So keep it up. Well done. And thanks for the insight on what's going on over there in New Zealand in particular. And hopefully I'll get a glimpse of those big guns. I haven't seen them in quite a while. And from what I understand, they're still big and large and very healthy.
Gonna go put some work in now at the hotel gym, Ariel. But I'm holding you to that, man. Would love to have you on the show later this week. It'll be
anytime.
Good to see you.
Anytime. Thanks, Phil. Appreciate it.
All right, brother.
All right, there he is, Phil Murphy of ESPN. Always great to have him on the show. Appreciate his insight very much. So that's a bit of the 248 story. Of course, plenty more 248 coverage to come. I'm going to Las Vegas tomorrow. We've got a ton of stuff. Media Day. Obviously, the weigh-ins on Friday. We'll do those daily diaries with Mark and Brett after every day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We are doing a radio show Thursday night, which I'll tell you a little more about later in the program. But for now, let us go to an old friend, someone who has nothing to do with 248, but has some news to break. My fellow Canadian, and in particular, my fellow Montrealer, my fellow Québécois, the Quebec kid himself, the Canadian gangster himself, Olivier Aubin-Mercier, is kind enough to join us on the program with some news to share for all of us. Olivier, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Wow. Or you're
How
here.
How are you?
I'm good, Olivier. Long time no speak, my friend. Everything good with you?
Yeah. No, everything is good. I'm in vacation right now. So everything is great. I think last time we speak to each other was in Canada, the last event there that I fought Armin.
That's right.
If I remember correctly. You were sick that day.
I was sick. Yes. You know, back then there was not as much fear about people being sick, so I appreciate you talking to me back then. These days have, you know, things have changed a little bit. But in any event, let's talk about you here because I understand you have some news to break. I don't want to steal your thunder. The floor is yours, my friend. What do you got?
Yeah, man. I finally signed with someone. And I'm happy to tell that I signed with PFL. Super happy. I was looking. Actually, like, I started following them maybe 2 years ago. And I really like the concept of PFL. I liked it so much that during those 2 years, I was trying to, first to win my last three fights in the UFC, but to finish my contract and get in the PFL after that. So I'm happy they still took me. So I'm really happy to be with them, and it's going to be a hell of a ride for the next year.
First off, congratulations on the signing. Congratulations on the news. Thank you for coming on the show and telling us about it. Let me ask you a couple questions about it first. You mentioned the three losses. Currently, you're on a three-fight losing streak after the four-fight winning streak. Was the last fight in Edmonton the last fight on your deal?
Yeah, it was my last fight. So we took a risk and tried to finish the contract. Didn't play off like we have loved to, but that's it. Hey, life is life.
And did you know that night? Like, did you have a feeling that that might be it for you?
No, I don't think so. I was still passionate about the sport. I was feeling I was getting better every fight, even if I lost my last couple of fights. I really feel I'm a better fighter right now. And I don't know. I don't feel that old. So I'm still good. I think I still have some more years in me.
Yes, you just turned 31, so bon anniversaire to you. Well done.
Merci.
Sorry for telling the world your age, but I feel like 31 is still very young. You're still in your prime. But I was curious, like, did you, when you were walking out of the cage in Edmonton, did you think there was a chance that you would not end up back with the UFC? Was there a thought in your mind that this could be the end of your UFC run?
Yeah, no, I thought it would be, I thought it would be it, to tell you the truth. And, I was actually really super sad. I'm really near my emotion, Ariel.
Yes.
So I pretty probably cried like for 30, 45 minutes backstage. It was really uncomfortable for everybody and awkward for my coaches. You know, you know when it's getting awkward when they tell you like, oh, let it up. And then 30 minutes later, they're like, yeah, maybe it's too much now. But, yeah, no, you know, the UFC. So I was getting a little bit stressed about that and stressed about my future. But it has been like 8 months I didn't fight now. So I'm really happy to have news now. I'm happy to have a goal, too. Like I didn't stop training. I think I was in fight shape for probably the last 6 months. Now I'm happy to have a goal.
And for those that may not know, I mean, there was a time, you like I said, you were on that four-fight winning streak. You had won 7 of 8, big wins over Anthony Rocco Martin and Evan Dunham. That was super, super impressive back at UFC 223. And then you hit that snag, Hernandez, Burns, and then Tarukian. What could you say happened there? Like, what's the reason for the losing streak? Was it just some tough fights? You met some tough guys. There's nothing bigger. Was there something going on in your life that led to that losing streak? What could you tell us about it?
No, I think they were really tough, really, really tough opponents. Probably a style I have trouble with. But I'm happy that, like, probably one of my best fights in my career was my fight against Arman. I really find it was a really good fight. I did some mistake. I did some big mistake actually, and that I think that's what cost me the fight. But I was happy with my progress and my progress against a big, strong wrestler. I don't think it's going to happen again actually.
Okay. And so you go into this tournament now. It's like a season format, of
course.
Yes, playoffs, and then you can win $1 million. Now, just to get it out of the way, you're fighting at 155, correct?
Yeah.
And you said you like the format. Do you like the format because you can win $1 million at the end of the season, or is there something in particular about this where there's no drama with the matchmaking and whatnot that really makes you a fan of this format?
Well, Ariel.
Yes.
$1 million is pretty cool, that's for sure.
Yes.
But the concept of it is really, really nice. You know, you earn your spot there. There's nothing about the number of followers you have, the number of likes you have. It's all you earn what you get inside the cage. And that's what I really like. And it's, like you said, it's like a tournament, but a playoff. It's like all the movie you watch when you were a kid, you know, and all the movie I watched when I was a kid, and the reason why I start the martial arts was those kind of tournaments, those kind of playoffs. So I'm really, really happy.
And what about fighting twice? Because if you make it to the semis, you'll have to fight twice on the same night. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, there was something raw about that actually. I really like it. I think it's going to be tough for me, but I think it's good. I think I'm going to have fun. I'm a little, for sure, that one of the things that is worrying with those kind of formats, it's the injury. But I think there is something really special about fighting twice a day.
Now, will we be bringing the Canadian gangster gimmick with us to PFL, or are we starting something new?
No, I think it's there to stay.
Yes.
I'm going to stay like this. I know. gonna have fun with that. It's good because I have no pressure, you know, to get the likes anymore. So I'm gonna do what I like to do, you know, having fun and put what I want to put on my social media.
Oh wow!
Having fun with that. That's it. Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean? So does that mean you're going to be, because you're sometimes very risque on social media, if you don't mind me saying. Does this mean you're going to be even more risque?
Risque?
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know I was risque.
Yes.
But yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I like that.
Maybe, why not?
I like that. And you will be keeping the mustache, I hope?
Yeah, well, you know, I this article last week about the coronavirus that you need to shave if you don't want to get it.
Oh.
So I shaved it a little bit just for the plane, and it's going to come back when I'm going to be back at home.
Okay. And what do you know, by the way, what do you know about the champion, Nathan Schulte? Do you know much about him? He's their lightweight champion.
Yeah, well, the only thing, well, no. I followed a lot of his fights, his last fight against Loic. I had some money on Loic, so I was pretty sad. But he's a really good athlete. He's a complete athlete. And it's fun to see that judo still work in the MMA. So, yeah, I'm a fan of his.
Will you say right here now on March 4th, 2020, as you announce to the world that you have signed with PFL, will you predict that come December 31st of this year, you will be the new PFL lightweight champion? Is that what you're telling us right here now, Olivier?
Yeah, man. I'm going to be a new champion. I'm going to be a millionaire. And I'm probably going to be drunk a little later.
Yes. I love it. Don't forget me when you become a millionaire, okay?
Yeah, I won't. We're going to go eat something good. That's a good restaurant.
All right. I love this Canadian invasion at the PFL. They just signed Rory. Now they signed you. This is great.
Yeah. But it's fun because it's really special because it's kind of the first time, I think, that the biggest name, the biggest active name in Canada in MMA are not in the UFC and they are in the PFL right now. So I think that was really interesting, and it's a big. I think it was a big move for PFL.
I love it. Well, félicitations, as they say back home. Very happy for you. I'm happy that you found a new home, and that there's some Canadian blood in PFL. This is very exciting. Of course, we can't forget about Sarah Kaufman as well, who is over there. She's from Victoria, BC. Thanks for coming on the show, and especially during your vacation. I didn't know you were on vacation, so thanks for taking some time to talk to us today, Olivier.
Hey, thanks to you. And talk to you when I'm a millionaire, okay?
All right, deal. It's a deal. There he is. Olivier Aubin Mercier, the Quebec kid, who is a great character. I love the Canadian gangster gimmick. I love the mustache. I love everything about him, and I love this signing. These are the kinds of guys and gals that PFL needs. I mean, they've got enough faceless fighters out there. Like, you ask me right now, who are the six champions? I don't know if I could tell you. I know Lance Palmer. I know Nathan Schulte. I know Kayla Harrison. I mean, I could probably sit back and think about it for a second. But I'm saying there's just a lot. And I said it time and again. I wrote it in my weekly thoughts column. They need to change like 80% of the roster. It's just too much of the same. Same storyline, same guys over and over again. They need a fresh coat of paint. Rory, fresh coat of paint. Olivier, fresh coat of paint. Let's see who else. I understand they're going to be announcing new fighters and the full rosters in the coming days and weeks. I'm very curious to see who else they came up with here, but I like these two signings a lot. And yes, I know that Olivier is on a 3-fight losing streak. And yeah, he's from my hometown. That has nothing to do with it. We need established names, young guys. The guy's still in his prime. Look up GSP talking about Olivier Aubin-Mercier. Look that up. Speaks so highly of him. Now, we've heard about the great fighters in the gym who don't translate into great fighters in the cage. The Mike Piles of the world, right? He was kind of the most famous one. And maybe Olivier's that guy. Who knows? But these are the kinds of guys that PFL hasn't had and the kind of guys who they need to have more of. All right? That's my take. I like this signing. By the way, this could be a future Helwani Roadshow question. Name the PFL champions. I bet no one's getting that. Speaking of trivia questions.
It's time for the Nose World Order Trivia Challenge.
Ooh.
With ESPN's Andrew Davis.
Ooh. Wow. This is great. I thought I wasn't supposed to speak at this point. I thought Stats Andrew Info was going to talk right now. Are you there?
I am here, Ariel. Stats Andrew Info is here.
Wow, look at this guy. All of a sudden, he becomes a star at UFC 247, and now he's got his own snazzy intro. That's a really good intro, by the way, and I like the music. This is great music underneath it all. So I understand that you have some trivia for us. You've come bearing gifts.
Absolutely, yes. We're back for another time, UFC 248 this weekend. So we have a new category for you, Ariel. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready. By the way, off top of your head, can you name the six PFL champions?
We have Lance Palmer, Nathan Schultz, Kayla Harrison.
Setter.
Heavyweight. See, I'm still thinking of last year because I know Sean O'Connell, Felipe Lins both won that last year.
You're
so
just buying time.
I'd have to rack my brain about it.
Isn't that amazing, though? I mean, you live and breathe this stuff, right? I mean, I bet you could tell me all the Bellator champions. Isn't it amazing that you couldn't think of Ray Cooper, that you couldn't think of Emiliano Sordi or Ali Isayev? By the way, I'm reading these names because I couldn't think of them either. Doesn't that speak to a problem?
Yeah. I have to admit, I'm going on record saying that Rory McDonald is going to win the title at the welterweight division this year. I love Rory. That's my guy. I'm going on record right now saying Rory's going to win.
How about this? We're going to have Rory and Olivier Aubin-Mercier. You just got that breaking news. He's going to win 155. How about that?
Canadian MMA taking over.
That's right. We're not here just to take part, Stats Andrew Info. We're here to take over. Now hit me with the questions.
I love it. The category this week is undefeated UFC champions.
Oh.
I must preface this by saying it is in their totality of their MMA career. So, for example, Kamaru Usman is not one of the fighters on this list. He's undefeated in the UFC, but not undefeated in MMA. So this is UFC champions who are undefeated in their MMA career.
Thank you. That's a big, by the way, that's a big pet peeve of mine when we just talk about, oh, this guy's 8-0. No, whole MMA career. So thank you for including that.
You're welcome. Here we go with question one. Who was the first fighter to win a UFC title with an undefeated MMA record?
Oh, my gosh. The first fighter ever. Now, are we talking modern day? Because, like, wouldn't Hoist Gracie count?
So we're talking about titles, not tournament titles.
Oh, okay.
So a physical belt.
Gotcha. Wow. Oh, my God. This is tough. First fighter, undefeated fighter to win a UFC title. This is what you're asking me.
Yes.
My God, Andrew. My God. I'm going to throw one out there, but I don't think it's right. Rashad Evans.
Nope. Have to go much further back to that, to the first UFC title fight, heavyweight title, Mark Coleman, 6-0 at UFC 12.
I swear to God I was going to say Mark Coleman. I swear to God. Why did I say Mark Coleman? I'm so mad at myself right now.
All right. So you can't bat 100%, but like in the PFL, you can still get in the playoffs with a loss.
So mad.
So here's question number two.
Okay.
How many female fighters became a UFC champion with an undefeated MMA record? I'll read that again because the specificity of the question here is important. How many female fighters became a UFC champion with an undefeated MMA record?
Okay, so Ronda Rousey is one of them.
Yeah.
Holly Holm is another one.
Yes.
Not Miesha Tate. And then not Amanda Nunes. So there's that division. Then 145 doesn't count because, well, not doesn't count, but is excluded because Chris Cyborg wasn't undefeated. And Amanda Nunes wasn't undefeated. Let's go to 115. Ioana Jędrzejczyk was undefeated. So you can add her to the list. Rose Namajunas was not undefeated. So you can get rid of her. Carla Sparza was she undefeated? No, she wasn't undefeated. Am I right?
So what is your final answer?
Okay, okay.
I believe you came up with three, Rousey, Holm, and Young Jacek.
Yeah, wait, I'm still going here. And then, of course, Rose then lost the belt to Andrade, who was not undefeated. And then Andrade lost the belt to Zhang, who was not undefeated. And then we go to 125, Nico Montano. Nico Montano undefeated, for God's sakes. Was Nico Montano undefeated? I'm going to say no, she wasn't undefeated. And then Valentina was not undefeated. So I'm going to say those three.
Three is correct.
Yes.
Ronda Rousey, as we know, was given the UFC title before she actually fought Liz Carmouche and then won the title. Holly Holm then beat her. And Jan Jacek defeated Esparza to win the strawweight title. So
yes.
One out of two so far. Question number three. Who is the only male fighter to become an undefeated UFC champion by defeating an undefeated champion?
Oh, easy. Lyoto Machida
over Rashad Evans is
UFC
correct.
98. Memorial Day.
UFC 98.
Come on,
we were
now.
Close to having Adesanya versus Costa this week, and that would have been another undefeated versus undefeated.
Yes, and plus one for pronouncing his name correctly.
Of course. All weekend long, it will be Adesanya.
Yes.
Question four. Which division has crowned the most undefeated UFC champions?
Oh, my. Most undefeated champions... I am going to say, you know what? I'm going to go back. Well, actually, 205.
205 is incorrect.
Oh, come on. Come on.
The correct answer is heavyweight with four. Mark Coleman, Randy Couture, Tim Sylvia, and Cain Velasquez.
Damn it. 205 had three, right? Evans, Machida, and John Jones.
John Jones was not undefeated when he won the title.
Oh, stop it.
Despite what everybody says.
Stop it. See, I'm going to appeal this one.
I wish he was. Well, it doesn't matter because it's still four for heavyweight.
Whatever.
It only would have been three
still
for
appealing
light
it. I really was going to say Mark Coleman, by the way. I swear to God I was going to say Mark Coleman in the first one.
Don't get hung up on that. We still have a couple more.
Okay.
How many undefeated UFC champions have there been from outside the United States?
Outside the United States?
Yes.
Born outside the United States?
Yes.
Well, Ioana
and... born and representing. Ioana, yeah.
Well, wait. Because you could say Cain was representing Mexico, but he was born in the U.S.
No, so U.S. He counts as U.S.
Okay. So, Ioana's one.
I believe...
Yes?
Yes. You're correct, Ioana.
Okay, Ioana's one. Lyoto Machida's two.
Yes.
Representing Brazil / Japan. Oh, of course, Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Correct.
Representing Dagestan and Russia. George St. Pierre was not undefeated when he won. Was Carlos Newton undefeated? Oh, what about Pat Miletic? Pat Miletic born in America. Actually, no, the Croatian sensation. Was he actually born? The hell am I supposed to know this? Wait a second, let's go over to 125. 125 is DJ, no. 135, undefeated. What? I'm not allowed to think this through? Really?
Time's up.
TST is on a tight ship.
Oh,
here.
My gosh.
The answer is four.
Oh, I was getting there. You need to give me some time.
Ioana, would you like to name the fourth then?
I'm too flustered right now. Zhang, no. You tell me.
We already talked about him. It's kind of the reason why we're doing this one.
Oh, is he? Of course.
Israel Adesanya.
Yes.
So the bonus round. The answers given resulted in 11 fighters to win a UFC title as an undefeated fighter. True or false, 11 is the correct number.
True or false, 50% chance. Of course the answer is... Yeah. The answer is... True. Come on.
There are two fighters you are missing. One is in the same division as Israel Adesanya.
Same division? 185?
Same division. Middleweight division, yep. Pretty famous win. Corporate Jake would get it. I would get it.
Of course.
Jordan would get it.
Of course. The great Chris Weidman.
Yes. And the other fighter is in the co-main event of his home state next month on ESPN.
Co-main event of his home state next month on ESPN. Co-main event. Oh, co-main event. I was thinking on ESPN, so that would be, well, the 18th is Khabib Ferguson, and then the 25th is Anthony Smith Glover Teixeira. I'm assuming it's the co-main event of that card. I don't know what the co-main event is on the Lincoln card. Come on.
Oh, it is March 28th, Columbus, Ohio.
Wait, you said next month.
Cody Garbrandt.
You said next month. We're in March.
Are we in March?
Yes.
Oh, that's on me.
Screwed me.
That's on me, though. You get myself the X there. So 13 is the number with all those people. Chris Weidman and Cody Garbrandt.
It's tough.
And that completes our game for today. You have won a prize. You get to go to UFC 248.
Wow. Thank you so much. There he is, everyone. Give him a hand. Stats Andrew Info, the brains behind the operation here at ESPN MMA, sprung this upon me last minute, had no time to prepare, didn't even know what the topic was. I mean, had I known it was, you know, an undefeated theme, could have done a little bit of research, but, you know, it's better that way. In any event, we thank him, and I enjoy that, and it's good to keep the roadshow theme rolling along, the trivia theme. We'll be doing that later on this year. More info to come as far as that is concerned. But for now, we have to talk about what happened at the very end of last week's show. As you may recall, we checked in with TST, who is joining us from Copenhagen, I do believe, and he was in some kind of undisclosed location, parts unknown. It was very echoey, but at the end he dropped the bombshell, telling the world that he was retiring from this program, retiring from ESPN, and would be staying in Scandinavia to pursue his short story career. Well, Travis, our film producer, told me that he was kind of playing a joke. I actually believed it for a second. He's that wacky. He's that kooky that I thought that that was actually the way he was doing it. But I'm told he is here. So without further ado.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
I'm back.
There he is. A lot of people were worried about you.
Listen, I mean, what I said, it's kind of the minimalist dream. I mean, I've been wanting to do something like that, just to go somewhere and have no responsibilities in a beautiful scenic place like that where I can just be active and be fit and do things I love and just write, drink coffee, and ride a bike all day. I was riding a bike in Copenhagen in rush hour traffic. And wow. you were dealing with bike traffic, which is like the most common form of transportation there, and then cars, and then feet. So it was a very stressful experience.
Now, let me ask you this. A couple questions before we get into all of this, right? First of all, good trip?
Great trip. It was a much needed time away, you know, from all the things I deal with here and people I deal with
here.
Wow.
Okay.
And it was a good physical, mental, spiritual refresh. I was at, got 30,000 steps a day, and I just love walking and exploring. And it was good. It was all around a very good trip. Learned a lot about myself, a lot about the world.
What did you learn about yourself?
So I learned, I kind of had an epiphany moment.
Oh. You and Israel Adesanya.
No, I wish, but...
No, I mean, he also had an epiphany, he told us.
Oh, okay,
on Monday.
Yes, you did say that, after his cat died.
Yes.
I did have a moment where, so, I mean, I like being alone. I like being myself and just doing my own thing, not having to adhere to other people's schedules, doing what I want to do when I want to do it. That's a great thing of being young and single. But as I was, I took a little day trip when I was in Norway to this little coastal town, 40 minutes from Oslo, I'd say, and it was called Drøbak. Drøbak, I believe, is the proper pronunciation. And I was sitting out overlooking the Oslo fjords, having a cup of coffee, and I was like, wow, I really wish someone were with me right now. I really wish Colby Covington or Josh Fabia were with me right
Stop.
Now, right? My dearest friends.
Stop.
And, you know, it just kind of made me realize that, you know, I do a lot of thinking about, am I in the right place physically? Am I in the right location? Should I be, you know, I was born in Seattle. Should I be out there? But I grew up in upstate New York. Should I be there where my family is? I've always had this dream of living in Colorado. Should I be there? Should I be in a big city like New York or Boston or LA or something like that? And it kind of made me realize, as I'm in Copenhagen, Oslo, these historic, beautiful cities, I was still feeling kind of lonely and I wasn't truly happy. And it wasn't until I got back to Boston, I got back to the United States, and I visited my best friend after being in Norway and Copenhagen. And I kind of had this moment where I was sitting on the back porch with my best friend, his girlfriend, and a bunch of other friends that I really like. And we were just recapping the night before and talking about the day ahead and just talking about a bunch of other stuff that really doesn't matter. We're just sitting there drinking coffee, overlooking the little town of Cambridge, Mass. And I was like, wow, like this is what it's all about. This is what life is all about here. It doesn't matter where you are. You can be in the best place in the world. If you're not there with the people that matter to you most, it really means nothing. It doesn't matter.
Wow. That was very deep. I almost got emotional there. I thought that you were going to say that you were sitting there alone and you felt very lonely. And so you fired up one of the podcasts that you missed involving me. And you just wanted to hear my voice so that I can keep you company. I thought that's where we were going.
No, when I was on the airplane rides, that's when I listened to your podcast so that I could fall asleep.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Now, were you wearing two pairs of pants or three pairs of pants on the plane?
So I actually ended up not packing as much as I thought I would.
Whoa.
So I didn't need to wear two pairs of pants. I had enough space.
And this turned out to be an ill-advised move.
Pants-wise, I was fine. It was more the upper half that I was struggling with. So I was around a lot of people who were smoking. I ingested so much secondhand smoke. I've never smoked a cigarette in my life, but I kind of felt like I was. And my clothes smelled so badly, coupled with the hostel itself, which didn't smell the greatest. So my clothes, and I probably didn't smell that great, probably has a reason why I didn't pick up any girls over there.
Okay, wow. You actually went there. Well, I'm glad that you are back. I'm glad that it was a good trip. I'm sorry to hear that they berated you for standing up at the Halsey concert. I thought that that was just very rude on their part and unnecessary. I appreciate the fact that you wanted to just rock out, even though you were by yourself. Why not? Was the concert good, though? Was it a good performance?
The concert was amazing. I mean, she's such a good performer. She has such a unique voice, and her songwriting is so good. And I knew all of this about her. I didn't know how good of a show she would put on, how great of a performer she is in terms of, you know, using the stage and just owning the stage. But I was wrong. I was completely wrong. She was amazing. It was a great time. And it's overall the highlight of my trip abroad just because I love her so much.
Wow. All right. Well, it's good to have you back, my man.
Thank you. It's glad to be back.
One more thing.
Yes, yes.
Why did you delete your Twitter? Everyone wants to know.
Yeah, so I was I can't remember. Actually, that's a lie. I was dealing with a couple things in my personal life. I was very frustrated at the world. And so whenever I'm frustrated at the world, I try to think of, in a very minimalist fashion, what can I cut back on to try and eliminate this distress I am feeling? And social media is usually the first to go. I think I had been starting to go on Twitter a lot more, starting to read a lot more comments all throughout, you know, the world directed at me or not about me or about you. And I would just get upset at the world. And I was like, all right, I need to get away from this. So deleted my Twitter just like that.
Wow. And you think for good or do you think that you'll be back?
Well, you have 30 days once you delete it. I'm still within that 30 days. But as of right now, I mean, I have no interest in going back. I don't think it's necessary. It doesn't make me a better person. And listen, like, as a minimalist, I know I say all these things every week, but I'm not perfect. I don't necessarily follow my advice every week because I'm a human. I have all these impulses, but the different thing is I'm very conscious of them and I try to fight them when I can. And sometimes, whether you're in a bad mood, something happens in your life, it overtakes you. That impulse to go read Twitter, to go flip through Instagram, like, I still get that. I want to be informed. There's a reason why it works so well. It's because we all have this innate sense of community that, you know, is deeply rooted with us from an evolutionary perspective. And so I totally get it. And we all fall victim to it. I fall victim to it as well. I just try not to. And sometimes I just need to completely remove myself from the situation in order to not fall back into those habits. That's why I deleted Twitter.
Okay. You are a very complex individual, but this is why I love you. On that note, what is your tip of the week?
So this week's tip. So whenever...
I thought you were going to say the tip was to delete Twitter.
No, that is not
to never live in
that
world.
It is not to delete Twitter, but in the subject of just getting rid of things, when I've talked about minimalism, I've talked about why you need to get rid of things, your motivations for getting rid of things, but I haven't really talked about how to get rid of things. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that I like to do whenever I am getting rid of things, which I probably do every couple months, I feel like I have too much stuff. It's time to clean house here. So what I do is I go to my favorite website in the world, and this is not an advertisement of any kind. I just love this website, donationtown.org. If you have pretty much any goods of any kind, whether that is home goods or clothes or some appliance or something, you go to donationtown.org, and I believe you type in your zip code or the town that you live in, and you hit search, and then a list of local organizations will come up that are looking for these things. And what they will do is you say what you have, like how much weight of stuff you have, and what you do is you put it in a box, and you just leave it outside your front door, and they come and get it from you.
Wow.
So if you ever want to get rid of things, that is a great way to do it, and you'll be not just getting rid of things, not throwing things out. They'll then go toward good use to someone else.
Did they pay you to plug them?
They did not. This is I literally love this website, donationtown.org. I use it all the time.
I know. You would never do that.
No.
Well, this is great stuff. And I'll be talking to you on Thursday, right? You'll be a part of the very first episode of the DC and Helwani show live on ESPN Radio. I didn't call for my music. All right, fine. We've gone long enough. ESPN Radio, DC, which is short for Daniel Cormier, Helwani. We've been talking about this for a very long time. DC and Helwani, midnight Eastern, 2 hours, 9 Pacific. That's when the freaks come out, my friends, late at night. Me and him. This is going to be a new thing. Usually on Thursday is what I'm told, but at least on some day before every UFC pay-per-view, it's going to be DC, it's going to be your boy Helwani, it's going to be us on the radio coast to coast, and then soon we're going to be daily, and then soon we're going to be on television, and soon we're just going to take over the whole network.
Call into the show. Call into the show. You can talk to me. Ariel, you don't like it because I usually kind of get mean with the callers.
Yeah, don't get mean.
So give me a call, and we'll have a good conversation.
1-888-SAY-ESPN is the number to call. That will be Thursday night. So if you're listening to this anytime before Thursday night at midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific, tune in. First one, DC, Helwani, live from Las Vegas. We'll be in the same studio. I can't wait. So that's another thing to add to the resume. Another thing to add to the menu, if you will. And like I said, we got a lot of coverage coming up from Vegas, from the open workouts to that show, to the morning weigh-ins, to the daily diaries, to the fight night coverage. All that and a whole lot more. But for now, we're out of time. So thank you very much to Olivier Aubin-Mercier. Thank you very much to Andrew Davis, a.k.a. Stats Andrew Info of ESPN, for his great trivia questions. Thank you very much to Phil Murphy. Thank you very much to Brian Butler. And thank you very much to Mark Ramundi. An absolute stacked edition of the Wednesday pod. I loved it. Hope you did as well. Continue to rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff and more. Continue to support this particular show on the feed, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, because then we get to keep on doing it, my friends. Love you all. Enjoy the fights this weekend. I'll talk to you from Las Vegas.